the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my left, we've got Martin.
No.
Hello.
We've got Andrew.
No,
Andrew. Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Summerfield. Bobby.
Hello.
That was funny.
For a change.
And across the table, we've got Rob Arbitier.
Hello there, Mike.
Because we always have Rob Arbitier.
That's right.
There's
whether
not
you
be
want
a,
him or not.
Yeah, there won't be a podcast without Rob Arbitier.
He's done more than anybody.
He's
true.
This is show number 55.
Yes. Don't you forget it.
Yeah, well, that's because I took a vacation. This is show number 55, and this is Rob's 55th show.
I schedule my vacations around the podcast.
That is correct. We're going to keep that one alive. And today, joining us on the panel, we have Martin Uchik, General Manager for Plus 24. And welcome. Thank you for sitting in with us, Martin. I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
To be honest, we got to tell everybody we had a different show planned today, but our guests kind of couldn't make it. So Martin was gracious enough to get the last-minute invite from Rob.
That's right. I knew we'd have a lot to talk about. We always do.
And actually, I'd met Martin before at a NAMM show. It was, and like you said, it was a dinner or something that we were at. And,
right.
You know, it's just a small world. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Plus 24?
Well, Plus 24 is a distribution company based in L.A., and we distribute Zenken microphones,
good mics,
studio mics, and for film production. And we are the Brainstorm worldwide distributor. We also manufacture the products here in L.A.
That's a clock that you like, right?
Yeah, I love Brainstorm stuff. Most people, they may not know the name Brainstorm, but a lot of people, especially from the old studio days, have heard of the Distripalyzer, which was always the box you would use when you had to fix time code problems. And the Distripalyzer, you'd go into any studio and you'd always see it sitting there, and it could reshape time code and
distribute time code, send
it to multiple places.
Yeah, it was great. Right. And it could tell you the exact frame rate coming in. Because we would get tapes sometimes where the time code would be at, you know, like triple or quadruple pull down. So it would be like running at 28 frames per second. And all the computers would just be hemorrhaging because nothing could lock to it. And you could run the code through the Distripalyzer, and it would show you exactly, it would say 28.83 or whatever. It would show you the exact rate that was coming in. It's just an amazing tool. And now they also have a digital clock, the DCD-8 that I use in my studio. It's just the best clock and distributor I've ever seen for word clock.
Is it just a word clock, or is it,
no,
does it
also
distribute the word clock like 10 outs or
yeah, it does
outs.
That, but it also can put out simultaneous high-def video sync. It's a really cool clock. It does a lot of stuff besides just being a really stable audio clock.
Wow.
So you can use it as the hub of a whole studio.
See, that was a commercial by Rob Arbitier.
Hey, I use it because I love it.
That's true. Isn't that funny? You know, your friends and everybody you bring over, it's like you use their products, you know, and
yeah, otherwise they're not my friends.
That's right.
Exactly.
In order to be Rob's friend, you have to have a good product.
That's right. That's right.
Well, anyhow, thanks, Martin, for sitting in with us, and feel free to jump in and argue with Bobby anytime you want. There's a few things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk a lot about software and SoftSense, and mainly of the guys in the panel. You know, I know you two probably use the most and are really plugged into samplers and synths, so it's I'm glad you made it. But I wanted to ask you guys something, because I actually got a message from a new listener to our podcast, and he was asking how to get started. And, you know, we've done podcasts on that before, but I wanted to
how to get started
in
with
the sound industry. That's one thing I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about was just a any advice you guys might have, and then I've got a really great idea for a person who wants to get on board. But I think the first thing is you got to identify what you want to do in the music industry or in the sound industry.
And are you saying he wants to be in sound?
Yeah, exactly.
Technical side of sound?
He wants to be in technical. He's really young, and some advice. And somebody wants to start out brand new, young, still in high school.
Okay, I could give you a 2 second thing. What I did when I was a kid, very young, I actually worked for free. Which obviously I'm support, you know, depends how young you are, if you can afford to do that.
Right.
And I ended up being literally a roadie, and I went on tour, and I worked for a sound reinforcement company.
But let's keep it with today's technology, though, because don't really have to, like, for instance.
Here's the thing. If somebody really wants to get into sound, if you're talking about a purist's point of view, it's really important to learn how a live recording band or whatever it is, if they're doing pop music.
Right, no, I understand
that. From performing live to some form of recording. So if you want to learn sound, it's okay to just say, okay, well, learn Pro Tools or learn the plugins, but it'd really be good to actually get a bit of a grounding and say, okay, you know something, that's the bass drum he's kicking, and they actually put a mic in it. So I think that's saying a really good way for if somebody wants to get into sound from a technical standpoint, to actually start to learn to sort of get the experience, get your hands dirty a little bit with a start.
Well, I think the fundamentals, we've talked about it before, how it's really important. Even if you're going to be working in Pro Tools or with plugins or whatever, it's important to know the fundamentals of how audio gear works and how signal paths work and all that stuff. And the nice thing about learning that stuff today is you can learn how a compressor works out in the real world, and then you can get one to plug into your laptop studio, as a piece of software. And so you can get... Once you've learned the fundamentals, you can get a lot more practice than you used to be able to get in the old days. You know, in the old days, if you were an assistant at some studio, if you wanted to get some actual engineering time where you got to, run a session, a lot of times you'd have to wait a really long time for that to happen. You'd have to wait for every other engineer to be out sick or busy or whatever.
Right.
Now, once you learn the fundamental of how a compressor is supposed to work, you can go home and on your MBOX, you can start playing with the compressor plugin with the newfound knowledge of how the real thing works, and you can actually practice with the plugin.
Right.
I think it's way easier to practice the craft now because you can work so cheaply on home computers.
Right.
But you still have to learn the fundamentals. I think you'll be much better, even if you only ever plan to use plugins, you'll be much better at it if you know what the original hardware did. We've talked about that before.
I think that's true, but here's some of the advice that I gave him. First of all, I said, you know what? Get a laptop, and I said Apple because of the fact that it comes with a lot of programs that you can use right off the bat.
Yeah, GarageBand.
And then buy a small little Pro Tools, LE system. If you want to work in sound and you want to work, the work right now is post-production. I mean, it's hard to make a living in music.
If you're talking about post, right.
Exactly. I'm just saying right now, It's post-production. If I was starting off in school, even if your passion is to eventually you want to mix records and things like that, start where the work is.
Well, it's not like there are a bunch of, record plant type studios popping all over that need personnel.
And I think I just wanted to kind of gear him towards something that at least there's active, because post-production can also mean, post-production for games and not just television, but it can also mean post-production for film. And so I kind of pointed him down that direction.
Well, GarageBand itself, I mean, that is really a studio in a box. A lot of it is made. They lock out a lot of stuff so that it's real simple.
Right.
But there are so many fundamentals there to learn and practice. It's great. I mean,
the thing I can compare it to is if somebody said to me, I want to be a painter. I want to become a painter.
Right.
I wouldn't say to them, okay, buy a Photoshop. Using your mouse. But
why not?
Here's why. Because I think, obviously you're talking about one person and getting into sound is so wide, you can't really say whether you're a post-production editor, recording engineer, electronic audio engineer.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds a wild thing, but I think it's really good for a young person for at least 6 months of their life to go out, if he wants to do pop music, or if he wants to work with an orchestra, whatever it is, and actually work for free and actually get smelly with a band in a truck and actually realize, guitars hum when you turn a certain direction. Why is that?
I totally agree.
And learn all the hum.
But I think that's, I think that's the step after. I think you get a computer, you get yourself familiar with a tool that you know is going to be used out there, and then you go looking for the where you can work for free, where you can volunteer.
Well, also, you're going to have a computer anyway.
That's what I was going to say. You're going to be computer literate at this age anyway.
And then the other thing that I said, too, is it's kind of along the lines of what you said, Rob, is get a good book. There's a lot of really great books on recording. You can go to Barnes & Noble, and there's some really good good books that give you all the basic information on how compressors work and what they are and reverb and things like that. Even if you don't touch a real compressor as a hardware box and it's software only, if you know, like you said, Bob, if you know the theory and you know the whole concept of what a compressor does from a book point of view,
yeah,
it really helps you understand your software
plugin. But I would just say, well, I'll say this. A really good real compressor still sounds better than the best plugin.
Absolutely.
So I just think if you don't try to get the experience with the real box, because the plugins aren't as good as the hardware yet. Maybe in another 5-10 years they will be, but they're not yet.
They won't interact the same. I mean, there's so many. But anyway, even this is whatever we use, analog or plugins. If you're talking about audio, every single sound that we hear and edit in our Pro Tools is either generated, of course, if it's synthetic, but at some stage it's recorded with a microphone. And the only way to get that is by learning how to plug a microphone in and what a microphone does.
I
think it's essential. If somebody wants to learn to be an audio engineer, let's just say, or a sound of manipulator of some type, I'm not talking about mixing, I'm not talking about advanced stuff, I'm just talking about basic stuff, they should go out and learn how a microphone works and actually learn to carry a mic stand, plug it in, and learn it just for 6 months just to get a grounding. You know,
well, especially because their competition is learning that and they'll be better.
Absolutely. I mean, really, really true.
Well, they could do that on their own, too. Get a mic, get a
well, they should.
Decent, yeah.
That's yeah, absolutely.
Part
of it. That's
part of it.
I mean, if somebody wants to get into sound, I don't know about you guys, when I always wanted to be in music and sound. When I was a kid, I was six, I had a little cassette machine. I was recording all sorts of things. I was farting in it, dropping my cereal bowl on the floor, all that sort of stuff, and just screwing around. I mean, that gene is in you at that stage. If somebody wants to get into sound, they must be a mad scientist. They must have that thing, and by doing that, they must learn how to plug. Yeah, just. But I really do think you have to learn a bit of the analog stuff first. And I don't mean analog synths. I mean the real deal, like a microphone. Plug it in, it feeds back.
Get
in front of it, drop something on the floor. How it sounds.
By the way, there is a flaw to that story that Bobby just told. Because we're about the same age, and there were no cassette decks when we were 6 years old.
No, I had a
cassette?
A cassette. I've got.
Bobby's 24.
I had a cassette. No, I was about 9. I think I was about 9.
Okay.
And I still remember the funniest thing I ever did was I couldn't work out how to. I thought, well, I've recorded on this. I want to wipe it. So I looked in the manual. It says, if you want to record over it, you know, basically, I didn't understand the English, but it said you've got to record over it, and then you can use the tape again. That's how I understood it. So I had something I wanted to wipe, so I pressed record, and I sat there for 45 minutes talking into it, saying, I'm supposed to record into this stupid thing to wipe it.
Martin, do you have any... Bobby, I can see you talking.
Yeah, it's so serious. I also thought the solo button on the console was when the guy played his lead line. But anyway.
Do you have any advice for somebody?
Well, I was wondering what you think about all the schools, the colleges. There's a lot of colleges who offer recording programs, private schools.
I think they're great. I think there's some really good ones that are out there. I think I've heard of some really bad ones that were out there that cost a lot of money and don't have the right equipment.
Schools are a way to get some hands-on time with some of the right equipment that you're not going to find, you know, in your basement.
Yeah. Right. We work in New York with Jim Anderson, you know, at NYU. They have a wonderful recording school there.
Right.
And a lot of colleges, you know, we sell to a lot of colleges now equipment who really beef up their recording departments. And I also see I have a lot of my customers in music stores. They really have that kind of background from a college, and now they work in a music store to have sort of like a free hands-on experience with all the gear, get in touch with a lot of studios and customers, and that can be a jump off board, too, to get into the industry.
Absolutely.
Well, NYU, you know, they have a fantastic facility over there. I know they have a Neve, and they have an API board there, and just some amazing gear there. It's definitely a way to go once this guy graduates from high school.
Yeah, there is that.
You know, but what's really exciting, though, is there's a lot of stuff that you can do, like with GarageBand and with Pro Tools LE that you can just do on your own and just learn that theory and just learn how to manipulate the tools, you know.
And keep in mind that having a successful career, I don't think the path, even if you go to one of those great recording schools, the path to a successful career is not like graduating from law school and then getting a job at a firm. It's not like that. It's not like there's a natural path from graduating from a recording school into the industry.
Unfortunately, sometimes it's detrimental, haven't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's much more about who you know and your personality, and do people like to work with you? Because let's face it, you're stuck in a room with your engineer
right.
for hours and hours. The school is important, but don't think that graduating from the school just means you get a bunch of job offers.
Right.
Know that your career is going to have to come from you pushing really hard and being great at what you do.
And there's a lot of outlets nowadays for you to really get your stuff on a national scale with like YouTube and
that's the easy part now.
Yeah.
The hard part is just being good at what you do.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing I was going to say is...
Still working on that.
Yeah, well, aren't we all?
You can definitely, though, I think, get into audio from the back end, coming from the computer side of things, from understanding the software and the programs as opposed to going the hardware route, especially in like post-production, because there's, you know, you may be a time where you never even have to mic anybody. I mean, obviously it helps
if you're
you.
A dialogue editor or something.
That comes to you, exactly.
I mean, again, you know, saying getting into sound is such a wide thing.
Like, yeah, I'm just talking about, and that's real specific.
But if somebody wants to be a recording engineer, a proper recording engineer that actually does set up mics and records an orchestra or a band, they need to maybe learn,
well, no, they need
the live side of a microphone.
You're absolutely right, because they need to
and
know.
And the sweet spot of drums. And
because my background, I came into audio via computer, via MIDI, you know.
What's wrong.
I learned more theory after I was mixing and got involved with designing computer systems and things like that. That's when my theory came in. But I really didn't start working hardcore with some of the really expensive compressors and mic pres until much later, after I had already been mixing for a while.
Right, because that wasn't what your
right,
job
it
actually
wasn't.
Was.
And so for me, it's still, even nowadays, there's a lot of, you know, when you guys go really hardcore analog, I'm a little lost. I'm thinking, what does that sound like?
It's a different world. It's different folks. Yeah.
But it's it. Well, you know, thanks for throwing out some ideas, because hopefully this will help somebody out there.
It would be a good idea to say you want to be in the audio industry is like saying you want to be in the car industry. You know, there's a million different facets to it. So you got to kind of figure out what it is you want to do, because if you dream of being a dialogue editor, you know, on a huge team working on a film with Scott, that's very different than if you want to be recording the drums for a Metallica album.
Well, the thing is, I don't think people, when they talk about wanting to get into audio, a lot of the jobs that are out there, people don't know about. They don't know that they even exist. They don't know that there's a job that is just dialogue on movies.
I'll add, though, for somebody that doesn't know what they want to do, I would say, and I'm most probably offend a couple of people, but if you become a really good recording engineer with a good fundamental understanding of even electronics, even if you really want to get old school on the crowd, and get yourself some good ears and hone your ears, you can do any job in the audio industry. You could do vocal editing and dialogue
That's
editing
true.
And mixing commercials with your eyes closed. Once you mix,
but that's
band,
like saying, you know, the brain surgeon can also take your blood pressure.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, but it's great to have that knowledge, because if you want to get into sound, you know, I don't think anybody starts off and goes, well, I really want to be very average at what I do. I just want to be like a this editor or that editor. I mean, I think people, most kids start off to say, hey, I want to engineer the next number one band in the world, or I want to record the next best orchestra or whatever.
Right.
I don't think anybody I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think too many people start off and say, I want to be a vocal dialogue editor, because it's not a bad job, but it's not the most taxing job in the world from a creative level, I will say.
I was a dialogue editor for
but
a couple
Well, I mean, I'm just
years.
Saying, but you can...
Thanks.
I know.
That can be a good 9-to-5 kind of job.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, it's definitely post-production, dialogue editing, sound effects editing.
Yeah.
Not even sound design, just sound effects editing in and of itself. You know, these are all jobs that you know, people could perceive as being boring, but are really important, and there's work out there if you can get it.
I'd say boring and important is the perfect way to describe dialogue editing to me.
It's just like accounting.
Yeah, it's necessary and dull.
Yes, but I will say that for
there
everybody
are people who are perfectly suited for
that's
it.
The thing. You know, I used to be a dialogue supervisor for a sound company, and you get editors that could cut dialogue, and just like anything else, you get other editors that just, you know, they could not do it if their life depended on it, you know, especially, you know, when you're trying to cut syllables and things like that and create words. It's just, you know, just like anything else, there's people that are good and people that are bad. But just, you know, mainly keep your eyes and ears open for the options that are out there, because, you know, there's a lot of different ways to make a living in sound. And unfortunately, I think one of the hardest, though, is to be a really good audio engineer, though.
That's what I'm saying. It's a nice challenging thing. You go and it's not that hard. When you if you love it that much, you're obsessed. You actually start, you study the electronics of it, you study the analog of it, you study the history of it, you study
the acoustics. The problem is, but people don't pay for it anymore. They don't
have to pay for it. I don't pay for mine.
No. What I'm saying is, to hire you. I know a friend of mine who has a studio, and you guys know him too, and I'll tell you who he is. He just got a studio. You know, he has to make a $1,200 a month nut, and the guy's taking, and he's really talented at what he does. He's new, but he's really talented at what he does. But, you know, he's working with musicians, and he goes, musicians are the poorest people out there.
Sure.
They have no money, and they're the most picky, you know? And it's just, I don't know. I think there's nothing wrong with being really good at what you're doing, nothing wrong with being a great audio engineer, but there's just not that many jobs out there.
There are not, but if you're really good at audio engineering, you can do any one of the audio jobs, so you will actually work more. You can do the dialogue editing with your eyes closed. You can do a Pro Tools session and fix somebody's vocal. You can chop syllables. It's not that hard. And you can do you can record the voiceover.
See, I totally disagree with that.
Oh,
totally disagree. Because you could be really good at placing a microphone. You could be great at that and be the clumsiest editor known to mankind.
You know what, though? You'll never know what you're good at until you try these different things. And I have to say that I've had a really strange, long, varied career, and I think successful, and it has been, there has been very little continuity. Like, if somebody said, you know, my production company is now 18 years old, Noisy Neighbors is 18 years old, and if somebody says, what do you do, I have to say, well, give me a time period. We've done everything from, you know, we remixed Woodstock from the original masters in 1994 for the 25th anniversary, because my partner Gary O is a great mixer. That was a super high-end mix job. But we've also done libraries of sound effects for different companies, and we've also written pop songs with huge artists. And it's because our talent is sort of very varied, and our skills, we've tried to hone skills in a lot of different directions. You know, if someone comes to us and says, we're looking for a company that just does dialogue editing, then we present ourselves to them as the world's greatest dialogue editing company, and then we live up to it. But it's such a strange industry, and it changes so often. The only way to be successful is to be able to change with it. And right now, I mean, this year we talked about in the last podcast how we did the High School Musical 3 game.
Right.
We've done a bunch of games for Disney this year, which is something we never thought of ourselves as doing. It just came up, and it seemed like it was a good fit, and it turned out to be a really good thing. But you just have to be good enough at your craft that if someone comes to you with an enticing gig, especially with a good budget,
right,
you should never have to say, no, I can't do that. You should make sure you're ready for whatever comes through the door. One of the analogies I always use is you never know when the door is going to open, but you got to be ready to step through it when it does.
Absolutely.
And you never know what you're going to be presented. I mean, we just completed, I don't know if we talked about it last time or not, but we just completed a theme park.
Right. Yes, you did.
Some music for a theme park ride. It's not like we were going after theme park music. We were 12 years ago, and we didn't really get much.
Right.
And now one just showed up out of nowhere, but we were ready to do it, and it went well. But that's the main reason I agree with what Bobby's saying about learning the fundamentals. It's more that you should never It's more that you should never have to say no to a gig you'd be interested in doing.
But the fundamentals are not your traditional audio engineer fundamentals.
No.
That's part of the fundamentals.
Right,
but
that's the core part of it.
Everybody's editing something that's been recorded.
No, I'm not talking about, let's not get all romantic here. Okay, let's just be practical.
Okay.
Fundamentals, I say you need to learn your programs. You need to know the tools that you're going to edit with. Quite frankly,
if you're just going to be an editor.
Right, and I'm just
in front of an analog console and say record that.
I'm not saying that's not a part. I'm talking about if you're going to go out and you want to start working, you want to picture your career, you want to go out there and work in audio. Okay, I'm just talking about the best case scenario to really get yourself a job. You want to start with the software, with the tools. You want to start with it.
Exactly what job you're going after, that may be true. I mean, if you know, I want to go in and cut sound effects, then, yeah, all you really need to know is the stuff that cuts sound effects. But who knows that you're going to be able to get gig?
Let me put this to you. You're editor. You bought yourself Pro Tools LE, and you've spent a good 6 months on it, and you're pretty down with it. You've got your own key commands, and you're quite fast on LE. And you're like, okay, I'm going to go and do a little voiceover editing gig at this company. They hire you and say, yeah, come on in, Fred. Nice to see you. Sit down, edit away. 3 edits, please. This, you do da-da-da. And they think, great, excellent. Da-da-da, great. And they think, wow, this guy's a really good editor. You know something, the VO guy is coming in, he's got a low voice, we need to set up a mic. Can you set up a mic in there, in the vocal booth for him, and record him, please? If you don't know the arse end of a dynamic microphone or condenser mic, or know what proximity effect is, you may sound a little strange, and they go, well, it's a shame this dude doesn't really know this.
I agree with that, but...
If you go in there and say, oh, voice,
no,
voiceover.
but... I mean, come on, we're not talking rocket science here. We're talking VO. So you get a mic, they have a good microphone, you put them in front, make sure you're not overloading.
But you don't want the first time you do it in life to be when you're there with the guy in the booth.
I understand that. All I'm saying is what's the most important thing at that time? The most important thing is knowing your tools. I'm not saying recording audio isn't important, and I'm just saying if you're going to have X amount of energy to put into something, I would say put it into learning the tools. That's
the microphone and the
I'm not saying
that's
part
of it. Is there a school on earth that doesn't say you should learn that stuff?
No, I'm not saying that you shouldn't
Mike
learn
school
that. I'm just saying, I'm saying you if you're going to have a scale and you're going to tip it towards learning how to mic a drum or the other side, learning how to work a really good sound editing program, and you want to see, hey, which way is it's going to serve me a little bit better.
You've got to know both of them. If you want to be an engineer, you've got to know both of them. You have to be absolutely proficient at both of them. If you want a professional recording engineer in music.
If you just want to be an editor, you don't have to know a thing.
You can be a typist with a pair of headphones.
And which gets me back to my original point, which... When you're starting off, how are you going to start this thing? I'm not saying
honestly, anyone I know who's very successful at this stuff started off with an insatiable hunger to learn everything they could possibly learn.
Exactly.
Digital, analog, and everything else.
But there's a lot of people, and I got the sense that this kid was one of them who it's just a change in the generation where, you know, I don't know. What can you say? It's like the old ways are not the ways anymore.
A lot of young kids who are in these recording schools who are totally absorbing the analog stuff and love it.
I'm not saying that's not important. I'm just saying you can just tell there's a shift to go more towards the software, you know, towards the tools, towards the software packages. And I'm not even saying that's the right way to go. I just can see how that can lead you down and maybe a place to start.
I have a young friend who's got a couple of gold records. He's got a couple of big... R&B hits, always done R&B, hip-hop stuff, and it's all computer-generated, except for a voice, rappers and whatever, but it always sounds great. He called me a couple of weeks ago, he had to do a remix for a new artist that cut live drums.
Right.
And he called me up and he said, dude, how do I get these drums? They're like the hi-hats on the snare drum, what's going on here? He didn't know what to do. And he was sitting there, he said, dude, how the hell did you do this? And he said, can I bring my mix around to you? What am I doing wrong? And you know, at first I said, this is what you're doing wrong. This is what you've got to do. And he said, really? You have to do it on every channel? Gate and keying and whatever. And I said, yeah. He said, I don't know how to do this. I said, what did you do in the past? He said, dude, my MPC 60. I just played a great kick. I said, you're right. I said, but, and times are hard in the economy, certainly in the US and in the world, really. And so people have to do other things. And this is a situation where this guy, he had to,
you know,
actually, there's a song playing right now.
Well, hey, listen, you know, I just think you're absolutely right. You got to learn the tools, but, you know, you can just tell that things are different than if you were going to start, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's a whole different tool set. Anyhow, we're going to take a break, and we'll see you on the other side.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were basically fighting about the best way to learn audio.
And we beat him up again.
But actually, Martin, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because we probably spent way too much time already. But Martin, you were telling us about in Germany. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the audio engineers there and what you found is the tone meisters.
The tone meisters.
What is that? Tell us about that concept.
Well, I'm obviously, you know, by my accent, I'm from Germany, and culturally we just have a very different paradigm there, that anybody who calls himself having learned a profession went at least to, was an intern for 3 years or went to university. And there's a long history, probably 100 years almost, of tone meisters that went to university. You have to be able to play piano, be a musician to begin with, and then you learn all the electronics. And so over there, you hardly see anybody in the audio industry or in the recording business who has not had a solid fundamental education in a university or in a school.
So it encompasses not only the hardware, but also music and theory and things like that, which was, you know, music, we didn't talk about that, but that's like the second thing I'd do is learn how to play an instrument, because, you know, knowing how to play an instrument and about rhythm, about tones, helps you in, no matter what your...
Learning to listen, definitely.
Your occupation is, from editing to, you know, dialogue editing to mixing to engineering. Music is a huge part of it, and you're just a step ahead.
But what Martin says is culturally, it is true, and in not to say all of Europe, but when you want to become a recording engineer in Europe, certainly in England, at least talking from old people like myself, you do definitely have to have a 2 years. A study of audio electronics. You have to have a good understanding of audio electronics, at least for the older guys. But because, remember, we used to deal with tubes and solid state as well, so you have to know what's going on. You have to understand all sorts of impedance loading and mismatching, all sorts of stuff. So there's a real good study that you have to learn. You have to be a little bit of a scientist to get that under your belt, along with learning pretty good understanding of music theory, being able to play at least an instrument half decently. And also then, of course, doing gigs to try and get find out where your talents are and what musical style. So you're right about it's a new generation now, and things have changed a lot for the better, because it's much easier and quicker for people to do it. But it doesn't mean to say that the quality of their abilities is better, because it's not, unfortunately. It's actually just because you can press automatic. It doesn't mean to say that you know what you're doing. It just means to say, okay, you can press automatic.
You know what we should do is we should... And I think I can make this happen. Get a music educator on the podcast and find out if they've had to adapt their ways of training people throughout the years, to work in quote unquote the audio industry. Cause that'd be interesting to see if they've had to adapt in certain ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyhow,
we'll beat you up later, man.
Well, at least you didn't give me a hard time for suggesting Pro Tools and not Nuendo.
I used Pro Tools the other day. You know what's amazing about it? Oh, can I ask you one question? You guys are all Pro Tools masters, and I'm sitting there going, I had to do a demonstration for my music library but long story short, so I needed some screen capture stuff. So I use Pro Tools because it's a common program. So I'm going, okay, very nice. Now I want to enlarge, zoom all the tracks. I had 12 tracks there. And the only way to zoom to make all the tracks big is to actually go in and click on all the files and make one track be big and one track be small. Is that true?
No, you can do them all at once.
You can do them all at once.
Okay, and see, on Nuendo, I can just scroll on my mouse and it zooms it all up any degree.
You can do that on Pro Tools. You hold a modifier key and then scroll them
out. It does do it. Uh-huh. I was going like that. Okay, I was going. Oh,
well, geez. But they have fixed, for the tracks, they have fixed, you know, mini, small, large, extreme.
No, but
jumbo.
Now you can go between those two, I believe. I never do it, but...
I never do it either.
You can now drag infinitely between the different sizes, I believe.
Really?
Uh-huh. So you can actually roll the mouse while I'm going... I was so missing it, I was going...
Yeah,
oh,
because
terrible.
With the D-Control console, part of what's built into the D-Control is a mouse and keyboard that are just basically a Pro Tools mouse and keyboard.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you find yourself, like, if you want to scroll... the screen, you'll hold down a modifier key and then turn the shuttle wheel, but you can do the same thing with the mouse scroll wheel.
Okay, great.
And I think they actually put a lot of that stuff in because it made the control surfaces easier to use.
Okay.
But it's definitely in there.
Buddy and I were both bagging on it big time. We're like, this is a loser program.
Well, you know, if you were to learn your tools first.
Yeah, if you learned your fundamentals. If you learned the fundamentals of Pro Tools.
Obviously, you weren't sitting there... trying to figure out where to put the microphone on the Pro Tools.
No,
see?
Okay. That's exactly right.
All right. Well, hey, let's move on. This week, Spectrasonics released a really big program for them, That was the Omnisphere, their big flagship synth that does all kinds of wonderful things in its gigantic library, and basically if you give it a leash and a dog, it'll walk it too. So, but the reason why I said that is it was one of the programs that I'm really excited to pick up. And, there just seems to be a lot of, boring software. If you go in online to some of the music stores out there, it seems like a lot of people are copying other people with the drums, and everybody has their virtual drummer, and everybody has their
the three I's. That's three I's: innovation, imitation, and idiots.
But one thing I wanted to ask you guys right off the bat is, is there any program out, any soft synth, anything that you kind of has your Jones in, or that you want, or that you've just got, and you're like, oh my God, this is like really great. This is just the best thing since sliced bread. Rob, you play with more programs than I know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think which ones make my wackadoo. it depends on the project. If we're doing something with sampling, it always comes back to Kontakt. If we're doing any kind of techno synth stuff, I like anything that Rob Papin or Poppin makes.
Lovely stuff. Like Albino.
Albino and Blue and those things. They're
beautiful.
Just spectacular. Really depends. I mean, more and more I like anything that doesn't bring the computer to its knees. A lot of these things have become real system hogs.
I'll tell you what I do. Not to jump over you, sorry. I go on the net and I search. Obviously, there's a lot of freebie, a little hoggy sometimes, not greatly written, but some are. Some really cool free VST I use, obviously, but VST plugins, virtual synths, and all sorts of cool things, Doppler effectors, and all these sorts of very cool, innovative synths and plug-in VST I's that I find that are free, and that they blow up my skirt more than a lot of the kind of like the glitzy, tipsy ones that gets released. Although, I tell you, Rob Papin's Albino, I still go to that in the Blue. It's smoking.
What is that? Just for people that don't know.
It's like a, well, it's a synth that's great for anything, but it's more designed for dance music and sort of techno and Euro dance music.
Is it like analog, like Sawtooth? And
yeah,
just,
but it fits great in the track.
Layering is brilliant.
Great effects. Everything syncs to your transport really easily. Really easy to get around on. Come with, a million great presets. The stuff sounds great.
Great.
And that, what's that, Albino and Blue? Is that what you're...
Albino and Blue are the two that I've used the most. Actually, by the time this podcast posts, I just got a notice that he's actually going to be at a store locally.
Is he?
Rob is, yeah. Tomorrow night, actually. And I may go to try to see him just to say, I like your stuff.
Wow.
And I wouldn't do that for most people. But his stuff is really spectacular. It's not a real system hog. It sounds great. It just, when you need, when you need some sound that's going to go
right.
With some cool filter sweep with some excellent effects layered and all the stuff, and you want it to just synchronize to your song and you don't want to have to think about it, that stuff is just great.
And don't you find it, his interface is intuitive.
Yeah, like, you can use it immediately without reading the manual.
Absolutely, it's smoking. And well, it sounds
really
good.
You go to robpapin.com, P-A-P-E-N. Yep. Although, as Martin pointed out earlier, I think he is from Germany, so it's probably Poppin. But
I'd say the other program is Bidul, which is very nice.
Yeah, Bidul is strange and wondrous.
Wondrous and strange. It's kind of like, what was it, the Native Instruments program? It's like a big...
Reactor?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little like that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
So that's it. That's all that's kind of floated your boat lately.
There's a good program out there, which I kind of... it's not really a plugin. It's a program. Don't worry. That's a boring, nerdy...
Which one?
What is it? Just tell us.
A translator. Have you hit the Chicken Systems translator?
Yeah.
Now, translator, they've made about the worst unstable bit of software forever, but just lately they're starting to get it together. At least some parts of it is really quite good. There's some really good... New features coming, especially for people like myself, as I like scripting in Kontakt. And they've got some really cool additions where you can start to do some really complicated batch processing in for Kontakt users. Really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Very nice.
Now, the reason why I was asking, and I brought up the OmniSynth, is I want you guys to project forward like a year or two, and And do you guys see any trend anywhere that you either want synths or you want software to kind of head towards? Because, quite frankly, you know, after Omnisphere, and it's a great program, there's, you know, a bunch of samples and there's built-in synth engines and it's built on their Steam engine and it sounds really good. But it just seems like after a while, it's all kind of starting to sound alike or elements.
Well,
are going to
I would say, yeah, a year from now, I think what we're all going to want is for Spectrasonics to take back Omnisphere because every single commercial is going to use it, every movie trailer, every show, every everything. You're going to hear the sounds.
I haven't heard it.
You're going to hear the sounds over and over. It's, you know, which is great for them, and I mean, it'll have a lot of great sounds in it.
And my question is where do you think the innovation is going to come? Where is it going to go? What's the next big thing that we're going to see? You know, that's just really going to knock our socks off. Like Martin, you know, since you were a distributor, is there anything out there that you see? Or?
I'm so totally in the microphone and, you know, analog world, so to speak, except for the distributor that I really don't know.
Do you? But, you know, microphones are still selling just fine.
How can they be? They're surely not useful anymore.
But, I mean, you're one step removed from the final customer because you're dealing with the dealers.
Right.
But do you get a sense of, is it still big studios that are buying the stuff, or are the products that are selling more the ones geared towards somebody with a home setup, or... is there a way to tell?
Well, obviously, there is no more big studios, as we said earlier, or hardly
I mean,
any
a few,
big studios. There's a few, yeah, but it's a dying market. So, of course, the end-user consumer market is the name of the game now.
Is the film market still?
There's obviously still
big films being made.
Yeah.
Is that still a big source of business for you guys?
For us, it is, definitely, yes. So we sell way more microphones for feature film production and for TV episode.
Than for music,
yes.
Now, let's talk about microphones, because obviously Bobby thinks I hate microphones.
Oh, I just don't think it's necessary to learn how to use them.
Hello.
No, but,
is this thing on?
But, you know, with a really great microphone... Do you find that there, what kind of improvements do you find in microphone technology? Are, you know, is it a higher dynamic range? Are you talking, you know, frequencies now that are, you know, 5 as opposed to 20? I mean, it's, you know, where do you go with microphones? Because some people would think that everything that could possibly be done to a microphone has already been done.
Yeah, well, that's obviously there is not in any way the innovation that you see in software technology. There's, and the big thing that we saw is, of course, the influx of microphones coming out from China.
Right.
That really rival the Neumanns and the Sankins and the Schoepses, et cetera, et cetera, at very attractive prices. That the problem that we see with these microphones, for example, is consistency between models. So what the high-end manufacturers still maintain is a high consistency between, you know, their each range of microphones. Does that make any sense?
Right.
And the innovations, like Sanken came out with an Omni microphone 2 years ago that records up to 100 kilohertz, which no other microphone did before. So for high-definition recording and orchestral recordings going to DVD and SACD, that's innovation that we saw.
100 kilohertz?
100 kilohertz, yeah, Omni.
Wow. And obviously you can't, you know, is it mainly you just sense the presence when you get up that high? Because, you know, I don't think anybody can hear 100 kilohertz.
No, but you can feel what it does to the harmonics.
That's what I'm saying. Is it a more open? Is it a more...
So let me bring up a point here real quickly. I'm going to be rude 1 second. Now, imagine if you took... I'm going to ask you a theory question on audio now. Imagine if you had... a 25 kilohertz sine wave playing and a 24 kilohertz sine wave playing. And I played you one and you wouldn't be able to hear it because we can't hear it that high. Then I played you the other 25K and you wouldn't be able to hear it because you can't hear that high, nor can anybody. But if I played them both together, what would you hear? It's a trick question. You'd hear 1 kilohertz sine wave. It's called a beat frequency. Difference between 25 and 24K. So a microphone like that can record all these beautiful harmonics up in the air that we can't hear, but yet by themselves, but they get come into our audio range. So that captures it at a high recording rate. That's that's what recording's all about.
That's just the whole reason. That's the whole reason 96K, yeah, which you shouldn't be able to theoretically hear any difference between that and 48.
Right.
That's why it sounds better.
Yeah. And the other thing is runtime differences, so you can much better spatialize the instruments if you record in higher frequencies, because our hearing is very sensitive to directivity, and that's, of course, done by microseconds difference between your left and right ear.
What kind of microphone is it that records up to 100 kilohertz? Is it just a standard?
It looks like pretty much
a condenser, cardioid pattern.
It's an Omni microphone. Omni. It's an Omni. It has a very specifically shaped head to eliminate reflections on the head. And they worked for years on stretching the membrane just to, you know, the exact tension that it can record these high frequencies. It was developed together with NHK in Japan, which is a huge radio station there. So that's one innovation that comes from Sanken. Generally speaking, of course, we have microphones now that have a USB output, which is interesting for the person you talked earlier who just wants to record in their computer, can plug directly into there. But generally speaking, that's pretty much the innovation on the studio side. In the field recording side, I think there is more innovation as far as making very small microphones, making miniature microphones.
Right.
Where Sanken also pioneered a very small lavalier microphone that's used in all feature film production called the COS-11. And headsets, you see a lot of people now running around with headsets. So there is some innovation there. But it's mainly in the form factor of the microphone and not so much in the basic technology, of course. That all has been invented and there won't be any changes.
No, but you know what? It just goes to show you, though, with the microphone that records at 100K, I mean, that actually is a pretty big deal, because as you get into higher definition audio, you know, I can only imagine if you had a stereo recording that was done like that and the sweet spots, like some of those, the classic, the name of that, their record label, slips my mind, where they only record their orchestra with a pair of, you know,
XY pair,
but they spend like hours trying to find the right spot. And once they find it, boom, they're just going straight to digital. I can only imagine what it would sound like with something like that.
The other latest innovation that Sanken came out with is a surround microphone. So obviously that's a market that's increasingly growing with the new digital television, which has to be broadcast in surround.
Scott Gershon had talked about that mic on a previous broadcast.
He has one of those. Yes, It's called, what is it called? WMS5. So, and it's actually pretty interesting technology, and there we come back to knowing your tools.
Mid-side.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know what is that. So it's a one figure eight capsule and two cardioid capsules. And so that's a trick question. How do you get five channels out of a figure eight and two cardioid capsules?
Sum and difference. It's amazing.
You're never going to let me live this down, are you?
Oh, man.
Stereo microphones and surround microphones.
Let me ask you, you brought up a great point, and I should have asked you about this earlier. The Chinese microphones that are coming over, and I've bought, you know, I've probably about 10 or 11 of them, and you're right, the consistency is definitely a problem. Number one, coming from a manufacturer who's basically competing with these microphones, aside from the consistency, are there any other things that they do good or that they do bad?
Well, we don't see them as a competition, because they really help young people or people who don't have the budget to get into recording and educate themselves. And then they learn to appreciate the higher-end microphones over time. So this is just – that's not really – Volkswagen is not a competition for Porsche.
And, that's true.
Technology-wise, I think the high-end microphones, they show not only consistency inside a model number, but also over a longer period of recording session. Their diaphragms are just higher quality. They're not so susceptible to – changes in humidity and just being used a whole day. So a cheap microphone might sound different 3-4 hours into use than an expensive microphone.
You know, that's a great point, because a lot of people don't look at that. If you're going to be recording drums for hours and you're going to do an album, you know, and you want that snare to sound the same at the beginning as it does at the end.
Vocals is the big thing, because the singing and the hot air coming out of a singer's mouth gets... if it's a condenser microphone, it gets on the little capsule on the little head, basically, and starts to change the conductivity of it. So it starts to get thinner and thinner. So if somebody's belting into a microphone, and even though you've got a pop cover, the heat of their steam of their voice, it changes the sound of it. So you'll get the first couple of verses were maybe great, and then all of a sudden towards the end, it starts to sound thinner. It's really, really trippy. It's very hard. That's why a good microphone is so unappreciated. But people think, oh, this is a good microphone. But it's amazing. It's like a Volkswagen and a Porsche. You go, man, this is just. I didn't even know it. These sorts of things were taken into consideration when they build those great mics. It's amazing. Really, massive respect for great mics.
You know, I remember you know, Sanken microphones were like. Oh, you know, you bring out the sink and you're like, oh, you know,
yeah,
you sit on a little pillow and you don't want to touch it, you know.
Yeah.
But they're great microphones, and there's a couple, you know, few brands that have that kind of like, you know, panache, you know, that.
Well, and Martin was mentioning, you know, that one thing they've investigated is different form factors for the same kind of technology, but in different form factors. And I had a thing pop up. A few months back, I bought a high-def video camera, and I was looking for a, you know, sort of a better mic to use with the camera that could attach to the camera, but would sound better than the built-in mics that come with the camera. The camera, the picture is spectacular, but the sound isn't so great. And Martin showed me this, I forget what the model was.
CMS-10.
CMS-10, this mic that actually was the perfect size to fit into the boom holder or the mic holder on the camera. And it was just like, it was a whole different experience recording with this thing.
Yeah, and it
made the visuals look better because it sounded so much better.
And just going back to the kid who wants to learn to be an engineer, I think it's really essential that young people are just, they don't have to learn it straight away, but they should be made aware that there is such much better, higher quality stuff than 99.99% of the stuff we get to hear every day on the internet.
It's not like they're going to not like learning it or experiencing
it.
I'm working with a young punk band right now that, you know, these guys are 20 years old, but they put themselves through Musicians Institute, through a recording course just for one semester. And it's not like they're just brilliant recording engineers now, but at least they understand, and they're not trying to be engineers, but when they walk into the studio with their guitars and bass and drums, at least they understand what the guy's doing when he puts the mic in the kick drum, and why he might have another mic outside the kick, and why is there a mic under the snare or on top of the snare.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to understand that
stuff somewhat. I think it's real important just to say, you know, especially for the next generation, because... You know, it's a shame to let them just go off and think that MP3s are great and, you know, just that.
Well, you know, I can agree with you on that because there's a generation of people that don't know.
There's a lost generation.
What good audio is, you know. And even when they hear a good record, since it doesn't sound as loud or overcompressed as, you know, what today's pop music is, they can't appreciate, you know, the subtleties of that sound, and they can't appreciate the dynamic range in that that album, because it's just not all, you know, just beating you down. All right. Well, let me ask you a question. If you wanted to invest in a good Sanken microphone, what would you suggest if you're going to save your pennies because you want a really great microphone? What's of your product line, is there a specific mic that she's like, well, this is a great one to kind of get into it?
Well, they're of course all great.
Yeah.
And they actually really are.
But for instance,
it really totally depends on the application. We don't have a single microphone that's a duplicate or similar to another microphone. They're all very unique in their own way.
So do you have one that's like, you know, you can use for vocals and let's say an acoustic guitar?
We only have one large diaphragm microphone, which is actually the only microphone in the market right now that has like a two-way speaker, two diaphragms stacked on top of each other, a small diaphragm and a large diaphragm. And that is really a classic microphone used by a lot of high-end recording engineer. And one other thing I wanted to point out earlier about the Chinese microphones, right, which are not bad microphones, is that they, of course, all copy existing microphones that are out there. And they have not managed to really copy the real high-end microphones that allow the engineer to create a signature sound that is unique to the engineer. In other words, if you buy a Chinese microphone, you just sound like everybody else. If you have the talent to pick out unique high-end microphones, you can create your own signature sound.
Very good point.
That's a great point. And you know what, Bobby, I will give you this, that if you do know how to mic, you've got a great microphone, and you've got a great mic pre, it's going to make your job easier when you're mixing.
I agree. And thank you for agreeing. But, sound engineers, the artistic side of record as a recording engineer is learning, at least getting your character, discovering what microphones give you the right character that's good for that instrument or for that voice or for this application, and learning what mics are out there and how they sound and which combinations is a massive talent and skill that's really essential to learn. And, you know, like a double diaphragm microphone. I mean, I used to use that mic on lead vocals. It's a great sounding mic. It's a really great sounding mic. You go, man, now I know what that sounds like on that voice with little harmonics. It's a real good skill that young people should really be aware of if they want to get, they want to grow up and be good. They don't want to grow up and be average.
What's the list price of a microphone like that?
It's about $2,500.
That's not bad. That's actually not bad for a.
You have it for 20 years.
Yeah. I was expecting to hear a 7 or a 9. <You know? laughs> But, because, yeah. You get the.
A good point. These microphones, they basically last forever. I mean, if you treat them right, they're a lifelong investment. Plus, they don't depreciate. I mean, used Zenkins on eBay, if you can find them, right. They pretty much sell it at this price still.
And Zenkins, don't you have a really nice stereo setup with the small mini capsules? Am I thinking the right?
Well, we have a stereo mic that's. Have you seen our CU-180? We call it a microphone with balls.
Yeah, the little furry, the little round.
Yeah, it has two round capsules that rotate, so you can create any stereo pattern.
Right, any angle, right?
Right, any angle. There are two cardioid capsules on one shaft, so yeah. It's kind of interesting. It's fun to sell.
And what does that mic list for?
That's about $3,800. And the surround microphone is $4,000, so $800 per channel.
For a really great microphone, that's very reasonable, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's not kids starting out at home stuff, but it's for trying to capture something good, that's a really good investment.
That's a really good, fun thing for kids starting at home. If they get two cheap microphones, it's really fun. If they get two cheap mics and start playing around with different angles and stuff, right, and looking up how they can. That's a great scientific experiment for a day or two.
Well, you know what? We were going to talk about soft synths, and we ended up talking about microphones.
More interesting.
Just goes to show you.
Much more interesting.
Okay, Bobby. All right, Bobby.
I will say this one quick thing about soft synths. I actually went into my favorite music store about a month ago, and I hadn't been in there in about 6 months because I've been really, really busy. And I went in, and I said what I usually say, which is just, what don't I have? You know, what's exciting that I don't have? And they know I mean in soft synths and plugins and stuff. And they couldn't think of anything. I mean, the new Ocean Way drums are cool, and there were a few things, but there wasn't much. And that, you know, Omnisphere, that's one of the reasons it's so anticipated in the market, because it's been a while since there's been a big splash by some new plugin.
Exactly. That was going to be my point, was the fact that it just seems like soft synths are getting kind of, you know, boring, but
saturated. We are saturated.
I think saturated is a better word. There's just a lot of them, and a lot of them cross over, and a lot of them are doing, you know.
And that's the problem with digital. I have to say, it's the problem with digital. All the programs are limited to what everybody has, the same tools, the same working tools. It's very hard for them to start getting really to sound much different than each other after a certain point, it seems to me. Anyway, I don't know enough about programming. Obviously, I don't know anything about programming, but it seems as though they all start to sound about the same. Once you start putting them in a track, it could be anything you're using. It sounds like something with reverb on it. It's like, yeah.
The one thing I will say that Omnisphere did do, and if you go to their website at Spectrasonics and you go to their video library, first of all, it's a great place to go if you just want to find some history on synths, because he does some great, great demos of how patches were, you know, stored in the old days.
Yeah. And and by the way, I think it's spectrasonics.net, right?
Yeah.
It's not .com.
Right, it's spectrasonics.net.
And also, check out Rob Poppen, P-A-P-A-E, P-A-P-E-N.com.
Albino, get Albino, you get on a demo, and go, shh. Every 3 seconds if you don't buy it. But it's great to hear the sound.
It's great.
But the videos there show great history of a lot of things on the arpeggiator.
It's easy for him to say.
Arpeggiator, as well as on patches and stuff. You just got to check it out. But the thing that really caught my ear is that they recorded a lot of, you know, their samples. They recorded all their samples, and they're all raw, and they're all interesting, and all their sound design that they did was just amazing, including the famous burning piano where one of their sound designers actually recorded his piano that he lit on fire. And I just think that kind of stuff is really exciting, because a lot of these soft synths rely on, you know, samples that were generated from other synths, and it's really neat to see somebody out there doing something, trying to do something a little new. As far as everybody else, you know, step on it, boys. Because it's after a while, the landscape tends to all look alike, you know, and the music.
Well, they're even starting to, there are too many companies even emulating the same synths. Like, I have a few ARP 2600 emulations. Now, how many do there have to be?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the market is saturated.
Well, that's, how about the one that you see all over the place, which is the, you know, classic Rhodes. There's, you know, tons and tons of Rhodes and Rhodes synths and Rhodes patches and Rhodes samples.
Have you checked out AAS?
Yeah.
Smoking.
It's really good.
Very, very good.
And none of them sound as bad.
I'd still rather have a Rhodes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that's a really good one, because it's a good model. So
yeah, it is.
Very,
it is.
Very good.
Well, how about the Rhodes pianos, though, that tend to be, you know, you hear them in their stereo, and Rhodes, you know, I had a Rhodes, and it was just a mono out.
Nah,
it just
but every,
out.
Whenever you used the Rhodes, you had a chorus stage.
No, I understand that.
And you had a graphic equalizer on it, and you had a mono in this quasi-stereo house. You just didn't do a gig without that.
That was a beautiful sound.
It was a great sound. Shh. Oh, I used to love it. Remember when the gate? Beautiful. Oh, juicy.
Well, we will wrap this up. This was kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
It kind of took
we
a little turn.
We didn't
left
we
and
gave
right.
You trouble.
But thank you, Martin, for coming and joining us here at the last minute. Literally
yeah,
the last
that was a
minute.
Lot of fun. Thank
and,
you.
No, thank you for your information on Sanken microphones. And I just want to tell everybody, if you want a really great microphone, I mean, great microphone that's pretty reasonably priced. You should check out.
How can we get over to Martin's website? Where are you?
Go to plus24.net.
And that'll have the link to all your to the lines.
Yes.
But, Rob, you working on anything fun and exciting?
What are we working on that I'm allowed to talk about? No.
My website.
Yeah, right. I'm helping Bobby with his website. I'm helping Andrew with his website. I've been doing, actually, I've become a bit of a code head, and I've been writing a lot of web code.
He's good. He's got it all down.
There's a big project I'm working on that's still going to be months away before I can really talk about it. But I've been spending a lot of my time just learning web technology and writing code. But musically, we're in the process of, we've completed two albums with two artists, and we're about to embark on two more albums, but I can't talk about any of them for a little while. And honestly, we're still decompressing a bit. The gigs I talked about last time, the High School Musical game and the theme park music we did, when you work on a project that intense, just because it's over doesn't mean your brain relaxes. It's really been a little bit of a decompression for the few weeks since it's been over. And I'm about at the point where I'm ready to dive into another all-consuming project like that. But, I mean, do you find it takes you a while to recover from something so intense?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like 3 months round the clock, it's just exhausting.
I've given up. I haven't taken any outside work, you know.
Oh, that's right. You said you were.
For a while, because it's just like, that. It was so hellacious, the spring, and it was the worst.
I'm just about recovered, but I spent most of August just kind of, like, staring at the walls.
Yeah.
Just to recover.
Although I did do a little educational thing that was kind of fun. It would just take like two evenings and it was, you know, it was kind of fun. But yeah, those big projects just suck the life out of you sometimes. Yeah. Bobby, what about you? Speaking of sucking the life out of
you. Yeah, exactly. Sucking what? The life out of you. Okay. What have I been doing? Actually, with the last 4 days, I've actually been trading only. I've been a great time in the markets for traders, so I've been doing a bit of that. But what I'm working on musically, I've been doing a project as well. I've got basically doing this One Life to Live. I just got word actually 4 days ago that I'm up for the third attempt of
for the Emmy.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
You're like, third time lucky. I said, I'm not going to do this again. So anyway.
This is the year you show up in a t-shirt and jeans. Yeah,
exactly.
Actually get it.
Get it, exactly.
Miss Lucci.
Truly.
You know what? Two things. Number one, I have my computer here and I just downloaded the brochure for Sanken microphones and I looked at the stereo microphone you were talking about. God, if I was in junior high, I'd be laughing right now.
isn't that what it is, right? It's just as well you put it up that way in the picture, right?
Right. Yeah, you could not demo that anyway but that way. some of your other microphones are just really gorgeous looking. You know, I'm looking here, not only are they reasonably priced and great microphones, but they also look really good too, so.
Yeah, and if you're shooting video, check out the mic I was talking about. What is it?
CMS-10.
That's an amazing mic.
Stereo camera microphone.
What's the FK1? What was the one with the two diaphragms? I can't remember the number. One?
That's the CU-41. It's the one with transformer. And at the AS show, we're going to show a transformerless, phantom-powered version of the CU-41 called the CU-44X Mark II.
Differentially, yeah.
Okay, well, that's about it. And
but if they have
again.
A question, how do they email us?
Mike? Oh, you know what? I can't believe that I forgot. I changed the email address for questions.
You did?
Yes.
Don't bother us at nowcastnetwork.com?
No. You know what? I had the email. It's just the server that we're using, the ISP.
Uh-huh.
They were, you know, I put spam filter on, and nothing gets through. Literally nothing gets through. I'll go into the spam folder and I'll see all these emails and I'm like, oh my gosh. And that's why for those people that I've responded to, you know, 14 days later, you know why I'm always saying I'm sorry. And so, you know, when I take it off, everything gets through and I get all kinds of emails going through there. So
Viagra.
Yeah, all those emails. No. So if you have any questions for any of the guys on the panel, any ideas for podcasts, you can reach me at mike@westwaveaudio.com. That's mike@westwaveaudio.com. I'll be sure to read it. And just don't send me any of those chain letters like, you know, pass this on or, you know, you and your friends will have 5 years of bad luck. So as long as I got one of those. All right. Thanks for listening.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Apex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.